in service of the gospel of Christ.
Welcome to Lectionary Kickstart. We're sparking your thoughts for Sunday as you plan your sermon or teaching lesson. I'm your host and producer, Jessica Bordolo, here with Dr. David Schmidt and Dr. Peter Nafsker. They're both professors of homiletics here at Concordia Seminary, St. Louis. You can hear all about us in our introductory episode, but trust me, they're pretty good preachers. All right, let's get started. David, where are we in the church year?
We are at the 25th week after Pentecost.
It's been Pentecost a long time.
It's a long time, and at the end of the Pentecost season, you start getting texts that look toward the second coming, look toward the final judgment. So it gets a little rough in the texts.
Yeah, there's plenty of judgment, but there's good news too. So that's what we got to balance, I guess.
What are the texts for this week, Peter?
The texts are from Zephaniah chapter 1, Psalm 90, 1 Thessalonians 5, and Matthew 25.
All right, David, what would you preach about?
I am going to go with the Matthew 25 text, the parable. I like this parable because of the way it asks me to think about God.
Okay.
So when you look at the parable, you've got the way God presents himself to be, and then you've got the way that the wicked servant sees God.
Imagines him to be.
And so you've got kind of a contrast between how God has presented himself and how the wicked servant sees him. So, Jessica, if you could read verses 14 through 15.
For it'll be like a man going on a journey who called his servants and entrusted to them his property. To one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, to another 1. To each according to his ability. Then he went away.
Okay, so we've got, there's another parable of the talents where everybody receives the same.
Mm-hmm.
And this one, they receive different amounts. And so there's this, and the question is why the difference? And that phrase, to each according to his ability. So God is someone who not only gives, but he also trusts that you're able to use what he gives.
And he gives to people specific to them.
Right.
It's a
right.
Kind of personal.
It's specific to them. It's specific to your ability. But God is giving, and he trusts that you are able to use the gift he gives you. And I think that last part is just so, so comforting. I think of when I was a kid, I remember the first time my dad let me use his pool cue.
Hmm.
We were playing pool. I know, it's just, but my dad's pool cue was special, right? Hmm. I mean, that's dad's pool cue.
Yeah.
And he ain't going to let you play with his pool cue unless you know how to play, right? And I remember there was this one shot and my dad's like, use my cue, because it showed that he trusted that I was finally at the place where I would be able to use his pool cue. I know it's stupid. It's a silly thing, but there's this relationship of trust and giving. I give to you because I trust that you're able to use this, right? And the reason that's so comforting to me is that I think, this is in the realm of sanctification, right? I mean, so they're not justified by what they do with what God gives them. They're not justified by that. But when you're in sanctification, I think sometimes the image of God that I have is that God is giving and I screw everything up.
Yeah.
And so the image here that God is giving and he trusts that you're able to use what he gives you, that is beautiful.
Yeah.
Right? He gives you children. Why? Because he trusts that you're able to raise them.
That's a disturbing thought.
He gives you mathematical ability. Why?
Yeah.
Because he trusts that you're able to use it. He gives you the ability to dance. Why? Because he trusts that you're able to use it. So there's this loving relationship where the gifts that we have received, my mind so often, I'm just like predisposed to think of my sin and how I screw everything up. And so you just name a gift that God gives me, and I'm immediately going to say, oh, yeah, I screwed that up, and this is how I screwed that up. And yet The picture of this God that we have is that he's a God who gives and trusts that you're going to be able to use it.
So you're emphasizing the kind of the creator, those like creaturely gifts, is that what you have in mind?
Right, yeah, the creaturely gifts that he offers you that you're able to use. And when he comes back, you know, when he comes back, it's, you know, each person, you know, says, here's what you gave me and I'm giving you more.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it's just kind of like, you know, you gave me this ability to dance and here's what I did with it. And it's a beautiful thing. And the master, you know, look, read verse 23, what the master says to the servants who do use the gifts.
His master said to him, "Well done, good and faithful servant. You've been faithful over a little. I will set you over much. Enter into the joy of your master."
Okay.
And I love that phrase, the joy of your master.
I know.
Enter into the joy. I don't know what the Greek is there off the top of my head, but what a wonderful phrase.
Right. Right. And the joy of your master is to actually give you more.
Yeah.
Right.
So he's not just a God who gives, but he gives and takes pleasure in giving.
Yes. And takes pleasure in receiving from you what mm-hmm. has been produced by his gifts and then giving you more because you're a good and faithful servant.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, so there's just such a positive vision of God that Jesus is offering here.
A little bit different than Amos from last
week. I know.
Still recovering.
I know, but then mm-hmm. you have the last servant who is wicked.
Yeah.
And his issue is not that God has mistreated him. His issue is that he doesn't know this God who is good and trusts his people and gives them good gifts. He doesn't know that God at all. And so, Jessica, read what? So you've got the one servant he gave one talent to, and the guy just buried the talent. And then when God comes back, he gives him the talent back to God and says, here's yours. But listen to what that guy says about God. If you could read verse 24 and 25.
He also, who had received the one talent, came forward and said, "Master, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you did not sow and gathering where you scattered no seed. So I was afraid, and I went and I hid your talent in the ground. Here, you have what is yours."
Okay. Isn't that sweet, right? I mean, you know, here you have a guy who's crippled by his own understanding of who God is. Somehow he's learned that God is not giving, that God tries to take. He tries to take from places where he has not sown.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a hard God and a hard master. And because he's learned that way of God, he's terrified when God gives him a gift. And he just buries it in the ground to protect himself so that when God comes back, he can say, here it is. So it's somebody who doesn't receive it knowing that it's been given to him because he has the ability to use it. Instead, it's like, you know, I've got this hard God, and he's gonna ask for stuff that he really doesn't deserve because he didn't sow there, but he's going to ask for, you know, what comes out of that, and so I'm just going to give him back what was his. And you know, unfortunately, the parable ends in judgment on this guy, and whereas the other people were good and faithful, this guy was wicked and slothful. He's wicked and not active. The master says to him, "You wicked and slothful servant." And why is he wicked and slothful? Because of the way he thinks about God.
Yeah.
And he, for some reason, didn't discover the God who is gracious, who gives to you according to your ability, who trusts that you're able to do good things with what he gives you, who's looking forward to receiving back what you have done. And when you bring that to him, he's going to give you more and bring you into his joy.
But what about the person who doesn't feel like they've done that? Like they hear this and they're like, I haven't done good enough with my gifts. Now I'm going to be cast out.
Well, you don't have that person in the parable.
But the wicked and slothful servant, he kicked him out.
Yeah, but that's not, the wicked and slothful servant isn't saying, I didn't do enough. What the wicked and slothful servant is saying, you're a hard man. And so this is what you gave me. Here's what you get back. Leave me alone. That's the attitude you have in the parable. I mean, you're right. Parishioners may feel like I've never done enough. But those are people who feel that somehow what they're doing is earning them favor with God. The parable starts out, God's already happy. He's already giving things to you. And he's giving things to you because he trusts that you're able to use them. Whatever work you accomplish with this gift he's given you, knowing that you can do it, he's going to celebrate it.
And this is where you're drawing attention in the parable more to the master.
Correct.
Than you are to the individual servants.
Right, because we try to put ourselves in the shoes of a servant.
Right.
Right. Which one am I? Did I get the five or did I get the two?
Right. And that's no. Right. You know, because your question, Jessica, I get that. You know, people would say, well, what about me? And I think you might even be explicit in a sermon like this and say, I want to direct your attention not to which one of these you might be. Maybe neither of them are you.
Because the question is not which of these you are.
Right.
It's what kind of a God do you have?
What kind of a God do you have?
That would be so helpful because I have read this parable and felt scared. Hope I didn't bury that talent or I'm kicked out.
The big question is, who is your God? Is your God the master who is gracious and gives and trusts that you're able to use what he gives, and when you bring something to him is going to rejoice in it, is going to give you more and bring you into the joy of the master? Is that your God? Or is your God this hard, mean God who's going to make demands of you even when you haven't been given something? And the question is, well, how do I know who my God is? My God is Jesus.
Your job as preacher is to tell them who
right.
your God is.
Now,
your God is not a hard
no.
God and not a God who delights in punishing and who sows where he or reaps where he hasn't sowed. Your God is the one who is gracious and kind and gives and empowers and rejoices.
Yeah, your God is the one who can take a fisherman and make him a disciple.
Yeah.
Who can take a tax gatherer and give him the ability to write a gospel. The picture of God obviously needs to be anchored in the love that's made known in the death and resurrection of Christ. I mean, it's obviously anchored in that. But I think it's a relationship that is more than forgiveness. It envelops all of your life.
Think about forgiveness, life, and salvation.
Right.
Kind of the life that God gives.
The life.
The fullness of an abundant life.
That sounds like a sermon that would encourage me. Peter, what about you? What would you preach on?
I'm going to finish out a series on 1 Thessalonians 5, I think, verses 9 and 10. Would you read that, Jessica?
For God has not destined us for wrath, but to obtain salvation through our Lord Jesus Christ, who died for us, so that whether we are awake or asleep, we might live with him.
That's going to be kind of the promise, the good news that is going to drive this sermon. God has not destined us for wrath, but for salvation. So with that in mind, I want to think about how this day of the Lord is coming, like a thief in the night. And Paul says in at the very beginning, you actually don't have need to write anything to you about this. You know that this is coming. And so for some of your congregation, some of your hearers, they know this well. Jesus is coming back and, we don't know when, but he's coming back. Some of them don't know this very well. Some of them are not thinking in terms of the big story of the biblical narrative. They're not looking for the Lord to return. And so one of my first goals in the sermon is to make sure we're all on that same page, that people actually are actively looking for the Lord to return.
Now, what are you going to do? I mean, it's such a strange image, a thief in the night.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like, the Lord's returning like your long-lost relative in the night, but it's a thief, it's the Lord. And so how do you help people, recognize what the analogy is?
Right. I mean, it seems to me the analogy is less, I don't know why Paul chose thief, but it's less about the thievery.
Correct.
And more about the uncertainty in terms of timing.
Right.
But the idea is throughout Thessalonians, it's coming soon. So we don't know when.
So you have to emphasize kind of the surprising nature.
There's the surprising, and yet he says you have no need to have anything written to you because you're aware of this already. You know he's going to come, but you know he's going to come at an unexpected time. And so I read this text, and what I think of is, so my mom had this experience like 15 years ago, where it was the middle of the night. My parents used to live out in the country, and it was the middle of the night, and all of a sudden, there was light streaming in through their bedroom windows, like bright lights.
Oh, my gosh.
And it was just incredible. It woke her up, and she was so startled, and she told us later, she said, I honestly thought, well, here it is. The Lord's back.
Wow. This light. I love it.
Now, what turned out was that there was a helicopter. They lived in this small subdivision out in the country, and there was a health scare from someone in this small subdivision. And so they had a helicopter, several helicopters and ambulances and all this that didn't have their sirens on, but just their lights. And they landed right in my parents' front yard. But what sticks with me about that is my mom was one who is – she's looking for the return of
Jesus. Right, right.
And so I wouldn't need to write to her that the Lord is coming back. I could say like Paul said to the Thessalonians, now you know the Lord is coming back.
Yeah, the fact that she would imagine that that really is what it was.
That was just her reaction.
That is beautiful.
So a little bit of kind of knowing who you're talking to here in your congregation. Are these people who know this and expect this and are ready for the Lord to return? Or do you need to talk to them in a way that Paul's not really talking to his congregation or this
right.
Thessalonians and help them know what they don't know? So a little bit of thinking through that would be important.
But couldn't the same congregation be filled of both kinds of people?
You're probably right. If you're the one who's been preaching there week in, week out for a while, then you probably have a sense of what the people are hearing. And if you've been helping them locate themselves in this grand narrative, then they may be more familiar with it. If that's something you've not emphasized in your preaching very much, then maybe this would be a time to bring that up.
So otherwise, it does sound really scary. If Jesus is going to come back in like a thief in the night, what is he going to steal from me?
Well, this is where, you know, verse 3 and 4 can be helpful. Would
right.
you read verse 3 and 4?
Yeah.
While people are saying, there is peace and security, then sudden destruction will come upon them as labor pains come upon a pregnant woman, and they will not escape. But you are not in darkness, brothers, for that day to surprise you like a thief. For you are all children of light, children of the day. We are not of the night or of the darkness.
So the fear that might bring up, Paul is kind of cutting that off right there. Some
right.
will be saying, oh my goodness, you know, they won't sudden destruction will come, they will not escape. But you're not in the darkness, Paul says.
Right.
You are children of the light, children of the day.
So it's the same coming, but to some people it'll be like a thief.
Right.
And to others that doesn't even matter.
Right.
Right.
It's not
because you're waiting for it.
You're looking for it. You don't need me to tell you. You're a child of
right.
the light.
So if you're running around saying there's peace and security and everything's going to go along the way it always has been,
right.
watch out.
Right.
And that day's going to come like a thief in the night. But
yeah.
and if you're like your mom.
How you talk about the return of Jesus is either going to be filling in some potential gaps to what you've been preaching recently, or it's going to be just recalling that. And then leading into the verses that I kind of wanted to focus on with the promise. This day of the Lord when he returns is not a time of wrath for the children of light, but it's for a time for us to obtain the salvation that we've been destined for. So we've got this promise that I want that promise in verse 9 to be central, so that whether we are awake or asleep, we might live with him. Then I want to think about, so what? What's going to happen when the Lord returns, but what do we do in the meantime?
Yeah, you know, what do you think about this?
You got that look on your
face. I know.
This
I got
gonna
that,
be good.
That look on my face. No. So last week, you did a sermon on Thessalonians where you taught us we are always with the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
What if this week you taught us that God or the Lord always desires our salvation?
Hmm.
And so we live, you know, awaiting his return without any fear. Because the one who's coming always desires our salvation. And then we also live now engaging in all these acts of service.
Yeah, and so what does it look like then to live in that way? Yeah, I mean, you could do kind of a two parts to a sermon.
Right,
a little bit two-part series or something like that.
That sounds great. I'd much rather live like your mom, who'd be excited when the bright lights came instead of being terrified, when is it going to happen? Like, I'd rather live like your mom. That sounds great.
Yeah, and then living like that then leads you to certain things. It leads you to rejoice, to give thanks, to pray without ceasing. This manifests itself in our life together. I did, you know, when I was reading through this text the first time, one of the things that struck me the first time is how many different kind of analogies and metaphors and pairs that are used. When I first looked at it, I thought, well, which one of these You've got light and darkness. You've got day and night. You've got drunk and sober. You've got sleep and awake. You've got all these, you get the labor pains upon a pregnant woman. There's all sorts of images and pairs that Paul is using here that, you know, at first I was thinking about how could I use all of those? And then I thought, well, that's a terrible idea.
Wow.
And then I thought, well, how do I narrow that down? I do like the children of light, children of the day. I guess this is one area I'd want to look a little bit more. I don't know. Can you think of any place in the scriptures that talk of people of God as children of the day or children of light? I could think of some hymns that, you know, I want to walk as a child of the light.
I'm thinking of Ephesians for some reason.
Shine like stars in a wicked and depraved generation.
Yeah.
That's light.
Yeah. I mean, so light and darkness is a big theme.
Well, Jesus Christ is the light of the world is going to be something that you could work with. And so you could build a sermon around that image. And what I like about it is whether it's dark, whether it's night or day, when the light comes, it's a good thing.
Right.
Right?
Yeah. Well, and the light overcomes the darkness. This
right.
is Jesus.
Yeah.
Right. So even just, I'm thinking about if we're going to go with the light-darkness theme, you know, what connections can you have to the hearers in their everyday life that would help them make connections and think about these things? And so...
I think as a person sitting in the pew, that the day that Jesus comes back usually just sounds scary. I know my kids have had nightmares about it being the end of the world. All the apocalyptic movies, the world is ending and there's weird monsters walking around. But to think about Jesus coming back as like what we want, the goal, this great thing that you'd be excited about, I don't know, that would change how you would look forward to the big story, how you fit into the big story.
Yeah, and that's where that verse 5 to me is pretty...
How encouraging that is.
You were children of light. You were children of the day.
Well, that's all for today. We have free resources to guide your next step in planning at concordiatheology.org. You can find more episodes of this show on Spotify, Google, Apple. If you'd like to see the show continue, please subscribe, share, leave a review. I'm your host and producer, Jessica Bordalo. Join us next week here at Lectionary Kickstart when Dr. David Schmidt and Dr. Peter Nafsker spark your thoughts for next Sunday.
Yeah.
It's a good thing.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.